Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello again, I'm Lisa Rose Sullivan, back to introduce another Spin the Rally Pod special. Now, you've probably already enjoyed listening to Derek Dauncey's recollections of Mitsubishi's first Safari Rally win back in 1996. If you haven't, you're in for a treat. Go check it out on dirtfish.com. Well, 2 years later, the team repeated its success and it sticks in the minds of British rally fans as it was a maiden win for Richard Burns. So Derek is back with dirtfish.com senior staff writer David Evans to relive that less than straightforward victory. So sit back and enjoy.
So, Derek, last week you told us some incredible stories from the 1996 Safari Rally. Now we're going to jump forward 2 years here to 1998 and an event that will always hold a very special place in the hearts of all British and English rally fans. Obviously, Richard Burns and Scotland, Robert Reid, we can't forget him, first victory in the World Rally Championship. But there was more to the Safari in 98 than those two boys winning, wasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, when we won in 96, we were like, you had the feeling within the team, especially with Andrew's experience and the people around him, you know, he was into endurance events, and winning Safari for him was very special, as well as the Japanese. So when we left there, went back the next year, we kind of like, you know, increased our effort, and it didn't work in 97 for us. And it was a bit of a blow, to be honest with you. So going to 98, we kind of like...
What went wrong, Derek? Sorry to jump in there. What didn't work for you in 97?
It was just basically, you know, we went there with a new car, and Richard finished second, which was a brilliant result. But, you know, the funny thing is that once you win it, you want to win it. And we lost Tommy, and when Richard... We came through with Richard, and it was a shorter route that year. We kind of like from 96, it was a full on, you know, I think in 96 it was 660 kilometers. In when we got to the event in 98, it was 350. So some of the mystique of the event was lost, but yeah. we still wanted to go back and win that event, and it became really important. After we didn't win it in 98, second was really good. It was for us, but we, you know, Richard went wanted to win it again. Richard wanted to win the event, so did Tommy, and so did the team. So we didn't double the efforts because we put a lot of effort into 97. But for 98, you know, we really wanted to try and push it home, and we're into the Evolution 4 by this time, and it wasn't a fantastic transition from the 3 to the 4 straight away. It needed a bit more work doing to it, yeah. So we're developing the car a bit more. So going to that event, we were looking for a victory, and you know, we kind of still remember the fight between Colin and Richard, and obviously Colin had won in 97, I believe, if I remember right, and Richard really wanted to go back and win that event. Richard and Robert did, so you know, we went to that event with high hopes of trying to, you know, put last the previous season's problems away and come away with a victory.
How you talk about, you know, putting more effort in, and like you rightly say, you know, when you got prepared for 97, you would have done everything possible to be perfectly ready for that event. How do you then go back and even improve on what 12 months ago was the perfect preparation in your own eyes? What changes did you make in the preparation for 98?
I think that it behind the scenes, we're having a few issues with it's such a high speed event, and going back again to what you said on the last podcast, was you know, the stages are not closed roads, they're open roads, and you are flat out. So the tyres were taking a bit of an issue with them. The sidewall construction was slightly breaking down, and we were getting like golf ball size bubbles come up on the inside of the tread, you know, from high speed impacts. And they were actually, the bubble was getting that big, it was touching the strut body and blowing the tyre out. So we actually went before the rally to do a tyre test for Michelin. And the idea was that it was going to benefit all the Michelin runners, not just ourselves. We, you know, we had a very good partnership with Michelin. It gone on for, you know, right back to the Gallant days, and Amy Chatel was a very, very good supporter of not only us, but Toyota and the other, and Ford. So we went there to do a tyre test for them at the last minute. We had the resources there, and we ended up doing six different tyre tests on Magadi Road. And I think it came down to the last but one tyre where we found a solution for the problem. So again, we knew that that was possibly an Achilles heel that we had, and we wanted to try and put that to bed. So, you know, we put some effort into a small team of us flying out to just do that test. But Tommy came out, and we were running the last tyre up to about 120 kilometres without issues. So what we said before about knowing that we had a good damper for 96, we had to have a really good tyre that, you know, we weren't going to have issues where we're having to back off or think about tactically what we need to do with the tyre. So Michelin's chemist came out to the event, and he was a pretty happy man when he saw that we could get above the 80 kilometres, which seemed to be the maximum for the tyre at the time. So, you know, that was one area that we definitely kind of focused on.
It's worth pointing out here that people probably, you know, you can't comprehend on those early safaris, or not those early safaris, the later safaris, just how long the car would be flat out for, wouldn't it? You know, yeah, high speed.
That's the whole thing with it. You know, you look at the, you know, you look at the length of the events, and, you know, even though some of the stage mileage was cut down, you still had, you know, stages of 110 kilometres long. So 40 kilometres, 70 kilometres. So, you know, it's they are, and the choppers, the helicopters trying to actually keep up with the cars in some areas. They have to, you know, they're looking to try and cut a corner to catch them back up. So the tyres take a hell of a pounding when you think that, you know, any kind of small rock in the road, you can't avoid everything. They're going to pick some of the damage up from those. So again, we want to try and help Michelin out with that one issue.
What sort of top speed would they have been geared for?
I can't really remember. I mean, it was 130 plus mile an hour. So they're outrunning the helicopter. So the squirrel helicopter was, I think it was good for 140 mile an hour. So, you know, it is extremely quick, and altitude as well. You obviously lost some of the actual power from the car. So,
yeah,
you know, everything's pushed to the maximum in some respects. I mean, you're blocking the airflow through the front. It kind of causes all kinds of issues. So, you know, we basically left that test knowing that the tyre was quite good, but we picked up another couple of issues during the event, which we hadn't seen before, and they put a real heavy strain on the pre-event lead up to the event before we even started. And one of them was we had a seal on a damper that if it didn't last for 50k, if you run it for 20k and you didn't have a failure, you were fine, but you could have a top seal fail. So we were into running dampers before the event, just to run them in for 20 kilometers. I think it was done the day before shakedown. We'd last seen the car, so every front damper had to be run to make sure that, you know, it got through 20 kilometers and it was going to be good for 110 kilometers. So very small issue with a, you know, manufacturing of a seal. But in Kenya, there was no option to try and remake them there. We had to try and just pick out the best ones and run with them. So that was pretty interesting, the day of shakedown, running every damper.
And that, I mean, it's worth just paying tribute to Lasse Lampi there. You talk, you know, one of Finland's sort of unsung hero rally drivers, but he was with the team a long time, wasn't he, Lasse, and an integral part.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, I saw a picture online this week of Lasse with Lancia, with Marco and the management, you know, in the Lancia top. And you know, he did he moved from Lancia. He was driving for Audi in 83, 84. People have probably seen his name on the entry list for Rally GB. But he was an unbelievable driver, and he's now working with Tommy at Toyota. Yeah. And I sat down and chat with him in Mexico a couple of weeks ago, and he never seems to age. But even in 96, 97, if we'd entered him in the test car, he would have got into the top five, I'm certain of it.
He's amazing, isn't he? Just so much experience and exactly what you want from a test driver that can drive a car down a bit of road to almost within a couple of seconds of exactly what you want.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for Lassie was that he had a very good feel for the balance of the car, but mechanically he understood what the car was doing. And that's pretty important and a massive element. Even today, I'm sure he's given a lot of feedback to the Toyota team, because some great drivers we've worked with, they're not brilliant, you know, setting a car up. And yeah. Lassie would go in, if we had a normal test, even in Safari, Lassie would do the majority of the testing. The driver would come in for a day maybe and then fine tweak the damper settings after we've done all the, you know, the preloads in the transmission and the actual, you know, what we physically need to do on that side of it and the base suspension stuff. And it allowed a driver to come in when they've got really busy schedule to concentrate on, you know, fine tuning the car. We did that in Safari and we did that on every European and most rallies. Lassie would always do the first stint in the test car.
Yeah, no, and a real kind of end, like you say, you know, not many drivers have a real engineering approach. You know, we saw, you know, Colin McRae had a great ability to understand what the car was doing and could probably have rebuilt the car at the side of the road. And Lassie was the same, wasn't he? Or is the same?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and also now, you know, he's got a massive filer cabinet in his head. You know, I'm sure you come across a problem on the test. We've seen it when we've been in America. You know, you've seen that problem before, and you can basically shortcut the process to get to the end of it. So, you know, on that shakedown that day, everybody went across the shakedown. We took the test car to the back of Altopesi School and did some running, just to, you know, 20 kilometers with a set of dampers. I sat in with him that morning, actually, and just to make sure that they were right. And, just easy. He didn't have to drive at 100%. He drove at 95%, but consistently knew where, you know, what the pace of the car had to be. So I've got a lot of respect for Lassie.
Yeah. Would you have gone in the car quite a lot on the tests and stuff?
On and off. It depended. I mean, Safari, yes. We've done a few with that with Francois as well. But European test, Finland was pretty good with Tommy, Delacour and Tarmac. You know, it was interesting, got a feel for the car and how it works. And, yeah, you know, we call it the sack of potatoes. They just put you in there for the ballast, but, you know, it's you pick up quite a lot off it anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But back to this 98 event, which, you know, you look at the spread of the stages and everything, and it was a Mitsubishi event, wasn't it? You know, you were never headed. Burnsy won would we call it a super special, that first stage in Nairobi. Yeah. And then it was Tommy leading, wasn't it?
It was Tommy leading, and, you know, the stall was set out, really. It was looking strong. Mm. You know, as I said before, you literally are running a leg. You know, you're running... The rallies, each leg's a rally in theory. That's what you're looking at. You're looking to get to the end of each day, but you're looking to be in a good position. If you can have the car back to the last service, and you know you haven't got massive dramas, you're not carrying a massive job list for the next morning, which we have seen on a few events, then you know, end of the first day, we were looking quite good. That's you know, that was how we came out that first day. So, you know, what happened after that kind of like was disappointing. It was a bit of a silly retirement, but you know, for Tommy, but you know, we were in a fairly strong position.
What, it was an engine problem, was it?
It was basically the engine mount had broken. What happened was, there was a, as we said before, it's an open road. There was a bus that was pulling out in a village, and Tommy moved to the right to make sure he was super safe with anybody that was, you know, round the bus or walking with the bus. Yeah. and he ended up in a ditch, and he just fractured the left-hand engine mount, which we'd never seen before, and damaged the cam belt. And yeah, that was it. It was so clinical, you know, being out there for so long, and just to lose a car like that, you know, you envisage like taking a corner off, or people getting stuck in a mud hole, or you've seen all the different pictures, but it was a clinical retirement in theory.
Yeah, I have a vague recollection of Richard or Robert, probably Robert more recently, obviously, telling a story about on there. Did they have a crash on their test?
Yeah, there was a couple of things that happened in theory. It's really difficult for going back when Richard came to 96 and ran the gravel car, and 97 they entered. Okay. But their biggest issue was basically learning to cut some of the, I think it's Robert about it, you have to cut some of the European type of notes out. You know, because it's just too much to call over the long sections. It's so efficient just to go and write notes for Safari and to write them at speed and what, you know, remove what you don't need. So there's a few things where, you know, note optimization and you know, just getting caught out by the actual conditions is pretty difficult in some respects.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But when Tommy went out, I mean, there was a lot of pressure on that event, wasn't there? You know, Colin wasn't far away. He'd set some fastest times, but he went out as well with an engine problem as well.
That's right. No, I mean, we retired in Monte, so we went to Sweden, and Tommy won in Sweden. So, you know, for Tommy to kick off the option of the three championship wins, which is what we were looking for, you know, retiring in Kenya was really difficult, and pressure came across to Richard, and we'd had some problems before we got to the event. The other problem we had was we had a transmission oil seal issue, and we went. 96 was okay, but 97 we ended up obviously with double everything. So where there was one entry car in 97 98, we had two entry cars. So in the workshop we had five Group A cars, two for the recce, two for the entry and the test car. So the logistics of supporting all those cars was difficult. And during the recce, we found an issue with the carbon clutch, because we'd moved to the Evolution 4. The carbon clutches were failing in the water splash, because ingesting some water through the bottom of the transmission casing. So we ran out of clutches. So the morning that we actually ran out of clutches on the recce, the day that the actual rally cars arrived in Nairobi. So I ended up stealing a clutch from one of the entry cars, which at the time we weren't sure whether we'd get replacement for the rally. So It was a few conversations going back and forwards, and it kept Richard's car going, believe it or not, in the actual recce for the last day or so. So all those things, you know, they kind of, as I said before, the corridor, you're trying to shut the doors, but there was little things that were coming up all the time that you had to react to. The transmission oil seal issue was another one that we'd not had, and we were basically having the transmission boys were unbelievably overloaded just to make sure that the transmissions were really built every time the recce team came back and the test team came back. We were doing some, whilst the boys were wrecking, we were still carrying over some testing with Lassie. So we had the test team and a recce team going out each morning. So we had three cars running each day. So the transmission issue was one across the board. So Craig Stubley and a couple of boys were like flat out trying to get the transmissions rebuilt, because I think the test team were leaving at 6 in the morning and the recce team at 7. So it was long nights for those boys. And one story I'll go on to that basically carries to the finish was, I think it was either last but one or last night at the recce, we were just finishing off 2 o'clock in the morning, and I took the one car out to Nairobi Airport and came back in, and the clutch seal popped again. So it meant the boys had to, you know, they would all got hands washed, ready to go back to the hotel, and we ended up having to take the box out and do this box again.
Oh.
And I made a stupid statement to the boys that if we win this rally, I'd cut my moustache off. And it was game on then. You could see the eyes. You know, sometimes you've got to lift people up and you've got to say the things at the right time, but they were obviously, that obviously came back to bite me at the end of the rally.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, Safari is famous for the pool party straight after the finish. Was it in the pool that the moustache came off?
Yeah, what actually happened is I've been trying to find a there is a photo kicking around that somebody has seen, one of the boys had seen, with the Bic radio, Bic razor on the dashboard of the car at the podium. Someone gave it to Richard, and it was shown to me at the last service, and they were going to cut the moustache off, but the one thing was that before we got to the finish was that on the last day we had a bit of a scare. I think it was the last one stage. Luckily the service was at the end of the stage on the third day. It was a super special stage, but the last proper stage, Richard had nosedived the car, and we got a good lead by that point, but the temperature started to rise really quickly, and he came off the stage, and it was a big service. It was the front nose was pushed in, and if you look at some pictures, you'll probably see some pictures that are posted from Colin and McLean, whatever. The bull bar, when you try and take it off, if you bent the front, it can be difficult to get back on.
Yeah.
And we were into doing a radiator and intercooler change, needing to take the bull bar off. And it wasn't a straightforward job, and it was a quick service. And Richard was literally on tenterhooks about whether we'd get the car back out again. And it was a last minute scare. But, again, all those boys out there, all the mechanics, we moved all the mechanics across from Tommy's team, obviously, once he retired. So we had the numbers to support it, but it wasn't an easy job. But the boys, as normal, they actually, they nailed the actual job, got the car running, and we were back out again. But it was a last minute scare. And I thought my moustache was safe at that point when the car came in, to be honest with you, but it wasn't. And it was a real feel good factor. It was for Richard to win. It was brilliant. He put a lot of work. Him and Robert put a lot of work into going back to the event from 97 after what they'd seen 98. He drove really, really well. The team worked well. It was a shame about Tommy. We would love to have done a 1-2 there. But yeah, it was a fantastic result. And at the end of the event, when I was packing up, when I got back to the event, I think four or five of the mechanics with moustaches had already lost their moustache. So I did mine in the hotel room. I didn't want to face the someone trying to hack it off by the pool.
No, I was going to say yours wasn't the only moustache to go. So I think Phil Shorts went as well, didn't it?
Yeah, Big Ryko, the Finnish mechanic, Roger Mortimer. There was quite a few of them that went that night, but and again, Phil and everybody joined in, and they, part an integral part of the team. They were, they were good sports, and they went along with the boys, and they appreciate. It's a nice way to appreciate what had gone on. It might sound silly to listeners, but the effort to get through that event with everything that went on in the background, with all the logistics and the servicing, and we changed the style of servicing to change everything on every corner. We were doing it on two cars, so yeah. It was double the amount of parts. It was double the amount of damper building. It was the helicopters going back with dampers. It was the damper running vehicles, and there was no sleep to be had at all during a rally. So, the boys were brilliant.
Absolutely. And one of my recollections of the end of that event is the onboard from Richard coming over the finish line. There was a huge amount of swearing from him, wasn't there?
Yes. Yeah, there was because when Tommy went out, it was Richard was a perfect gentleman. He was British. He was basically, he wanted a win. It was a great fit for the team. He fitted in brilliantly. But it was, you see some of the drivers now, they're in it for themselves, and that's nothing wrong with that at all. I don't say there's anything wrong with that whatsoever. But also sometimes those drivers need to give something back to the team. And Safari, when there's that much involved with the event. Richard wanted that result, not just for him, but for the team as well. So a bit of stress relief there at the end of that stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And a great way to end this podcast. Thank you very much, Derek, for those amazing memories.
Thank you.
Thanks again to team manager of the Mitsubishi World Rally team, Derek Dauncey, and in the style of the very best Bond movies, I'm delighted to say he will return to relive the exciting end to the 1998 WRC season. Make sure you don't miss out by subscribing now to this podcast through your podcast provider. And while you're there, why not pen us a review? For now, thank you for listening.